This episode is brought to you by the official coffee of the Chromecast podcast, Fresh Roasted Coffee, who we've partnered with to make a special edition Chrome Unboxed anniversary blend. Here at Chrome Unboxed, we're not just nerdy about Chromebooks, we're also coffee snobs. And look, we wasted a lot of time hand roasting coffee before we found Fresh Roasted Coffee, and we haven't looked back since. This coffee is roasted fresh to order, immediately packaged, nitrogen flushed, and shipped directly to your door. And although we can't officially say that this Chrome Unboxed edition tastes any better than the normal anniversary blend, that is the word around town. But don't just take our word for it. Pick up a bag for yourself and let us know what you think. You can grab a bag over at chromeunboxed.com/coffee. Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of the Chromecast. My name is Joe Humphrey. I'm joined today by Robbie Payne.
What's up, guys?
And Gabriel Brangers.
Hello.
He's back.
I'm back.
He tested negative twice, got an extra test.
I'm the most negative person you know.
After 10 days or however long it was. And he's back in the office. We're glad to have you back, Gabriel.
Glad to be
Wasn't
back.
Quite the same without you.
Good to be here.
The podcast was interesting, though, last week, and it does reaffirm the fact that if we have to, we can
make it work.
We can do it.
We can make it work.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I was sitting in bed podcasting, yes. So for me it was great.
Hey man,
it was awesome.
We live in a magical world where you can podcast in your jammies if you want to. But it's good to have you back. Luckily, we don't have to keep doing that. I'm glad that you tested negative. So moving on, trucking along here. So first thing we want to talk about, we have a new giveaway. We're just chucking out giveaways left and right now. Like, who wants to give away?
Santa Claus.
Give it away.
Who wants
everything.
A giveaway? Who wants yeah. a giveaway? And this one's a big one, though, because we, last year, at this time, we're doing our On the Run to 100K for YouTube. And as part of that, we were giving away an Asus
C434.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if we had the... Yeah, I guess the new one wasn't out at that point, was it? 436
no, it
was.
No, 436 didn't debut until January.
Oh, we saw it.
Yeah, that's
CES.
Right. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were giving away the 434 last year, and that was awesome. But that was kind of tied to that campaign. So our best of Chromebooks came out, and we said, "Hey, look, here's a Chromebook that we really like. I think it won the mid range. No,
and
the 434
which one? In June when we did
yeah,
the best
no,
of.
No.
Or the one we did prior
the one,
to that.
The one in, back then. I can't remember. Whatever.
That's
doesn't
a
matter.
Good question. No, it doesn't.
Doesn't matter. It was
I'm
a. It was a.
Now.
It was a highly ranked Chromebook for our best of in 2019, and we were giving it away kind of as part of a separate giveaway. Well, this year we were working on our best of 2020, and our number one overall winner, without any question, is the Acer Spin 713. It's the Chromebook that Robbie has used more than I think any other Chromebook I've ever seen you.
Pixel
you had the
books.
Pixel books.
Pixel books.
Yeah, yeah, you had the original, and then you had the Go for a while. But this one stayed around, and I mean, it's sitting right here on the desk with us. And so, as part of that, you know, we were hoping to maybe do a giveaway, and we were even discussing, hey, we'll just go buy one if we need to and give this thing away because it's just such an awesome Chromebook. But we reached out to our friends over at Acer, and they were kind enough to send us one to give away. And so, we've got a brand new Asus. Gosh, I was thinking about 2019.
We've been talking Asus been, this morning though too, because they have a new device out.
It has been a very long week.
It's been a lot.
So we have a brand new Acer Chromebook Spin 713 that we are giving away as part of our best Chromebooks of 2020, and I couldn't be more excited to say that. It's so cool that they were willing to send us one of these things.
Well, and at this point in the year, especially with the best of 2020, you know, to be able to be giving away the Chromebook that even in that video and that post, and I think we would all just agree that like this is the Chromebook of 2020.
Yeah.
Like of all the Chromebooks that came out, when we start talking about price versus value versus just great user experience versus speed, you know, all those things together, The 713 just is its own category almost. Like it just doesn't, there's not a whole lot of trade-offs with this. And there are some, don't get me wrong.
Wish
there,
I had a fingerprint scanner.
I do. But you know, not having to hit enter on the pin screen anymore.
It makes it super fast.
Like,
yeah.
I can log in just as fast, you know, and I've got it. I keep it within just a handful of numbers, but it's a special little combination that, you know, nobody else knows and I only know. And I can, well, it took me a week or so to learn it. But, you know, now my fingers work.
I know. I'm just kidding.
I spy on Robbie when he's working, no. And I know exactly.
And that's
what
the thing. Like,
is.
It's so fast now, I could even do it, and you wouldn't even be able to see
probably
what it
not.
Is.
No.
So that's a small.
It's 8989 89.
It's 9999999. I move my fingers, but all I do is hit
he's
my
ring finger.
He's actually
hitting
down.
The nine. It just looks like he's hitting the eight.
Yeah, that's it. But it's. I mean, yeah, it's just a fantastic Chromebook. It's. I mean, it wasn't the winner of our premium. Because it's only $629.
Yeah, it doesn't go into that category,
right.
Because it's not.
But it still beats it
premium.
Because
but
it's
still
the best
probably
overall.
The overall.
So like, it's best in class and it's best overall. So
yeah, and we technically don't have that, you know. And so like you could put it up against the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook, for instance, and there's going to be some ways that the Galaxy Chromebook is going to beat it. It's
if you disregarded price.
Yeah,
yeah.
If you're just looking at them as Chromebooks, but still, like I owned both at one point in time in the year. I chose this one. Because I don't know, there's something
about that says a lot.
Yeah, there's something about $1,000 Chromebook that I don't know creates a certain sense of like nitpickiness in me.
He's mad at Samsung because they are still not acknowledging the battery issue. well, not acknowledge it. They're not fixed it.
Yeah, the weird thing is they acknowledged it.
I just don't think they can fix it. I don't think there's anything they can do. It's got a small battery and it's got a power hungry CPU in it. Like,
what are you gonna do?
Yeah, it's not much you can do to fix it.
Samsung and batteries, man.
Jeez,
jeez, Louise.
Yeah, on the bright side, they're not blowing up.
Yeah. Very true.
That we know of yet.
But it's super, you know, it's super thin and it's light and the colors on it are just gorgeous and the screen is fantastic. But that being said, that 4K screen, while it looks nice and is crazy bright, I would prefer the screen on this Acer because that 3:2 aspect ratio is so much better suited for the web. It's still high res, so I can get my face into this thing and not see a pixel, so that's not a concern. But it's not pushing nearly as many pixels as the Samsung because it's not trying to be 4K. To me, 4K screens on a 4K pixels on a 13-inch screen are just kind of silly. It's just absolute overkill. I mean, this screen is just under or just over 1440, so it's like 2204.
It's
a really
2204
by 15 something, you know. So it's a 3:2 variation of a quad HD display. Quad HD on this kind of screen is great. And you get the taller screen size. It's 13.5 inches, whereas Samsung, like if you set this next to Samsung's 13.3 16:9 screen, this screen looks monstrous compared to it and isn't taking up that much more space. It's just using the allotted screen real estate in a much better way. And so you end up getting the vertical screen size. I've said this like 100 times this year. Vertically, it's the exact same as a 15.6-inch 16:9 screen. So you get the exact same vertical space that you get on that size of a monitor and just, you know, cut the edges off.
And oh, by the way, the web is oriented towards that
top
sort of
to bottom,
content now.
Right.
It's not vertical anymore.
It is vertical. It's not horizontal.
Yes, it's not horizontal. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And so, it's just been a great Chromebook. Like when I have to go, like this week, you know, my wife had some stuff had to be done at an endodontist. Is that who does?
Sure,
bro.
Endodontist. Anyway, so she was getting her stuff done. I went down the road to a coffee shop that had like four tables open, you know, that you could sit in. So I found it. I actually got a table and sat down and had my coffee and was working on my Acer and. It didn't have to sit and think like, oh God, you know, like I feel crunched and because I'm used to working on this big, huge screen on my desk. It's just it's a fantastic device, great battery life. It doesn't have the best keyboard. Like I think Samsung's got a better keyboard, but it's best
it's good.
Class. Yeah,
it's not bad at all.
Very comfortable to work from, backlit, you know.
Trackpads.
Trackpad's really good too. No issues there. There are better trackpads, I think, that have better feel overall to them, but this is very good. And so you get a good keyboard, a very good trackpad, mil spec rating. So I chuck it in my bag. I don't think twice about it, you know, and then it comes down to the screen for me. Like I like 3:2 screens. There's just no way around that. Like the original Pixel Book, that was my favorite part of the Pixel Slate. You know, so there's a lot to be said for this device. And then it came in at $630 retail.
And I remember so whenever we first got the email from...
Is it on sale right now?
It is on sale right now. $80 off. Yeah, $549.
Yep. I thought I saw $80 on $80 off. Yeah,
$550 for this Chromebook. That, by the way, the predecessor to it, that it didn't change that much from. You know, the predecessor, I think, was a little more clunky in its build. This one feels a little more refined. It did have a stowable stylus, but whatever.
Now that you can, it's USI though, right?
Pick a USI.
So yeah, go get your iPlume and use that.
Yeah. And so like when we look at this device compared to its the predecessor to it that has an older processor still costs more money.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't even understand how they even justify this, but you know, it was a $900 to over $1,000 Chromebook when it came out, the original Spin 13.
Yeah, I remember the configuration I used for a long time, which I absolutely loved, was it was $899 if you bought it retail. Yeah. So i5, so the same.
It's the same internals as this, I think.
Is that 128?
Yeah, 128. Yeah,
so just crazy price difference.
So you knock $300 off, refine the build quality of it, and ship it for that price. It's insane.
Right. Yeah. I remember when they set the price, we checked back and forth our rep because we were like, are you sure? The one we're using.
And it's just that configuration. The other configurations seem, they're not like outrageously priced, but they seem priced more according to what we're accustomed to with these premium devices.
Like, this one was just knockout, man.
It's like they did something special with this one. I don't know.
I think they wanted to aim this one at the consumer segment.
They convinced Intel. They're like, man, we're going to sell a ton of these.
Yeah.
Can we get a discount on the chips?
Yeah. I hope they've sold a ton of them because we recommended a lot. And so, yeah, I mean, all of that to say, like, this is just such an awesome Chromebook, and the fact that we're giving one away is just makes me happy. So we'll link it. You guys definitely need to go get entered to win that. Our other giveaway is ending today, so you probably won't be able to get entered in that one if you haven't already, the Duet giveaway. But we have another giveaway starting, hopefully, this weekend. So stay tuned for that one.
Yeah.
So the other two winners, it is worth noting, the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook did win our top tier.
It did.
650 to up.
That tier is so weird.
Yeah.
We talked about that really in the video, in the post. Like, right now, I think we were talking about this yesterday, that there's a good chance that in 2021, the premium tier of Chromebooks gets a rejuvenation, like a new lease on life. I think multiple things played into it this year. One being the Lenovo Flex 5 shipping and causing everything to change a little bit. I just don't think you could show up anymore with a decent Chromebook and charge $600 for it and not think about it. Right. So now that pulls all of those $600 and $700 Chromebooks down. I mean, you can get the HP X360 14C right now for, it's at $150.
No, it's not anymore. Yesterday it was. It's back to retail right now, but on Black Friday it's going to be $379. It's going to be $250 off.
I mean, it's insane, and that's HP's MO. I mean, that's what they
put it on sale
done.
After they announced it.
The original 14
is always on
last
sale.
Black Friday was $350, and it sold like crazy. And it's, I mean, for $350, it is a killer device. Yeah. I mean, you get that even, just the extra 4 gigs of RAM. I mean, I love the Flex. I wish if Lenovo had done 8 gigs of RAM and 450, I think that could have been probably one of the most solid mid-range devices out there. But they don't do 8 gigs of RAM, and I don't understand.
Yeah, and I get, you know, you got to cut corners, but to drop a device that was that good for $409, for that not to be a special price, or hope you get it at that, like, you can just walk in any day and get it at that. It just it upended a lot of stuff in that segment. And so when that happened, and all these mid-range Chromebooks like the one we just talked about, I mean, there's no way that Acer didn't look at that and go, ugh, you know, we can't launch this device that's, yes, better than the Flex, but it's not $400 better than the Flex 5.
Right.
So we can't do that. So I think that happened. HP launched their, you know, the 14C at 630 as well. Which, again, HP always knows they're going to put their stuff on sale. So at first, when the HP came out, you're like, you're going to put that up against the Acer 713. Really? Like, how?
Yeah, because dollar for dollar, the HP is great, but it does not go toe-to-toe with the Acer at all.
It's eMMC storage. Yep. It's half the storage of this device. It's got a 16:9 screen it's okay.
Their screens are just, they're not bad, but they're not,
they're not great.
There should be a standard for flagship.
Yeah.
Air quote flagship devices, and HP's just never hit it. Never. No. I mean, and the keyboard's good.
That C1030, yeah. That thing shows up. We might be talking something different there.
If you're talking...
Oh, and the X2. The HP X2.
Oh, yeah, the X2 was great.
It basically had the Pixelbook screen in it. It was great.
But, like, the C1030 shows up, and you take money out of the equation. I'm hoping that it will be hands, especially when you get that 1,000-nit screen, it will be the best device ever made. But
for
then
reference,
but
that one is off the... when you
right, it's not there anymore.
You don't have it. You don't have the privacy screen right now, so that's probably not till 2021.
But we see that. Money's always a factor, though, so you take the C1030, and until we have it, we won't know, but you take it and you put it beside the Samsung, which one wins? Because the Mac Daddy C1030 is going to be, what, $2,000, $19,
$18? Oh, yeah, you know. For sure. Yeah, the what is the one they're doing right? The 999 one is it 8128? I think it is.
Yeah, I think so.
But you know, same idea. But then you start having to talk about the Acer then, right? I mean, it's a 13 something inch. I think it's a 13 inch is what the C1030 is. I can't remember if it's 13, whatever it
13.3.
It's going to be in this range. It's a 3x2 screen as well. Even tinier bezels than this display, and it's tiny bezels all around, which looks really sweet. But it's basically an extended 1080p display. So you're going to be able to tell ever so slightly. Like if you get up on it, you're going to be able to tell it's not as high res as the Acer. So the Acer is high res enough that you're leveraging some scaling and the pixels aren't perceptible by your naked eye. The C1030 is 1920 by... Is it 1200 that makes you a 3x2? Whatever it is. But it's basically 1080p with extra pixels on the bottom. So
that's weird. It's still 13.5. They've just trimmed the bezels down. So
it's going to stand toe-to-toe with the 713 we have right here. When we're looking at those two displays, they're both about 400 nits. So brightness won't be a thing. I'm sure colors are probably going to be really good on the C1030. But you're losing the resolution. It's not going to be quite as crisp. It's going to be interesting to see what 1080p looks like at that size, because we've just not seen that. We've got 1080p and a 13.3-inch 16x9. So it DPI should be the same, because we're talking probably roughly, actually less width than what we see in something like the Lenovo Flex 5 or the Pixelbook Go, which are both 13.3 1080p screens that honestly I never look at and go, ooh, God, it's so grainy. Like, it's fine. At normal viewing distances, you can't tell. Yes, you get your face up in the screen. You can probably pick it out. And that's the thing with these convertible type devices, that they're going to tend to, in like presentation mode or tent mode, to get up closer to you.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see, especially sat next to this one that's already out of the gate without sale prices, what, $380, $370 less than the C1030 is going to be, unless it comes out and is actually cheaper, because right now those configurable ones, we all know.
Yeah, HP always does weird stuff. We're
not really sure what's going on.
That's the one that has the 1,000-nit option, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, it doesn't right now. Like,
but I was just looking at it. But I didn't realize this. The base model, it's 400 nits. So good on them for finally doing that.
It's
but
400 or 1,000.
This isn't going to be a device that you're going to get at Best Buy, though. And it's not going to be a device that's going to be on crazy sales, I don't think.
Yeah, that's like, it feels
HP
like
HP should.
Right, there's HP's like consumer channels, and then there's HP's like corporate, you know, enterprise channels. This one clearly, I mean, it's, of course, it just says elite Chromebook C1030. I don't think it says Chromebook Enterprise. You can do the enterprise option. Upgrade, it just depends on how they want to market it, basically. Sure. So the Chromebook, that Gabe has right here, the Pro C640, is not marketed towards consumers, and so that's why we don't see regular discounts on it. We don't see it fall off on price. Like, to me, the X360 14C is a very similar Chromebook, and it's better all around almost, but it's geared towards consumers. Yeah. And frankly, it's going to go on sale more often, and it has everything that this one has.
This one's a hard to recommend.
It's made
Chromebook.
To be a fleet Chromebook that you just get out, whatever.
And you're going
to
buy it in bulk.
Yeah, and I hate it because this device has all the stuff that I like in a Chromebook, because I want that raw horsepower because I like testing stuff and I'm always messing with Linux and all that. But the screens, I don't use the screen. I plug into my monitor when I walk in, which is crazy because I have an HP monitor and I love it. But I plug into my monitor, my Chromebook's off to the side. Robbie works with his Chromebook as a second display in front of his monitor. I just use it off to the side, and I'll drag stuff over there if I need it. But I don't like, if I'm at home, I'm going to look at the Pixelbook Go. if I'm at work, I've got this plugged into a monitor because I like the power. I don't like this. I mean, I'm all the way up right here.
Yeah,
it's pretty weak.
It's no bueno.
Is it 220 or is it 250?
It's 250, but still 250s. Is the absolute lowest. I don't think that's the bar. The bar should be
300.
Yeah. That should be the bar.
We've moved up from there. So let's talk about why the Samsung won the top category for a second. I don't know that we got into that too much.
Sorry, I got off put because and all of that
the category is weird.
It's super weird. And we put the C1030 in there mainly because there wasn't a lot to fill it out.
Yeah, for real.
The C1030 isn't technically, like, I think it went up for order again this week. It had been unavailable. We're hoping HP gets us one. If they don't, soon enough, probably when the holidays die down, we'll just go get one. But the category is just weird because, again, we've had all these mid-rangers pull the price in, and it seems like the upper end of the category or upper end category hasn't responded to this.
Yeah, at least not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
And so,
because you got to really think Samsung was debuted in January.
Yeah, but all you have up there is the Samsung, the Asus Flip C436, which
let's be honest, why is that not on sale this year?
Shoot. Asus never puts their stuff on sale.
Because here's the deal, $799's.
No way.
If that thing went on sale, though.
But I mean,
knock off $150 or something.
If it was $600, maybe $650. I love it. I think it's a beautiful device. They've priced themselves out of the game. And I read an article this morning. I can't remember who it was. I don't want to say who it was because I'm not positive. But it was a very large tech site. Did their best of 2020, and that was their best premium device. Of the few that are out there, why would that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't achieve much better battery life than the Samsung.
Nope.
So if that's not, and if we start comparing, you know, apples to apples with the two, you really need to go with the $1,000 model of the Asus Flip
to
compete with the Samsung. It actually ends up with double the RAM of the Samsung at that price category. But when we start talking about screens next to each other, it's not even close.
Samsung blows it out of the water.
Yeah. We start talking about keyboards. The keyboard on the Asus feels good under the hand, but the backlighting is so jacked up. Like, it was so bad. Like, if you ever have to look at your keys,
they do that light gray keyboard.
It's light gray and then light gray keys. Like,
kinda
this
similar to this.
But this similar works. To this, but they have the soft keys, and for some reason, the light just washes out.
And the light goes through from the top and the bottom.
It's weird.
It was not great with the C434, but as long as you turn the backlighting off during the day, it was fine. It was dark enough. The symbols on the keys don't get dark whenever the backlighting's off.
Exactly,
they don't get dark enough. And so some of the light from, you know, the room bleeds into that, and then it almost turns the same color, and it just looks like you have a naked keyboard. Super weird.
Yeah, to me, it looks like, and this does it a little bit when it's dark, it looks like you have an old laptop that the keys have worn off.
That's exactly what it looks like.
So that was frustrating with it. The build to me for an $800 device, I picked the Samsung up, and even though it's thin, it feels so put together.
Solid.
Or the Pixel Book Go, you pick it up, it's thin, but it's like substantial. Like, you feel like you could like nail stuff in with
it. Oh, yeah.
You know, and you pick up the Asus, and it was relatively flimsy.
Yeah.
Like, if I pick up this, this Asus firm. There's a device I had in my hands the other day that was kind of like that. Like, you know, it's not terrible. You know,
I think this feels like this. I think this feels not well put together.
But at that price, you want it.
Yeah, this is about the flimsy. Like, I can click the trackpad by wrenching the device.
Yeah,
it's not good.
But then you take the Dell, which is also priced pretty crazy. But the Dell's 7410.
Yeah, they do
and
latitudes.
To me, it feels solid.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a very refined. It doesn't feel clunky, but it feels solid. But again, they've priced themselves to enterprise, and those are the people that are going to be buying them. Yeah. Robbie just closed all my Chrome windows.
So the Samsung wins pretty much across the board in that comparison.
Yeah,
and what else do we even have
about
on
looks
there?
And the sleekness of it, and like it's just beautiful. I wanted to love that Chromebook.
And for somebody who's going to be plugged in all the time, like it still.
Yeah, if you're not out and about.
Yeah. The top end, like if you want
we're not saying don't buy it. Absolutely, we're just saying there's a lot better stuff you could do with your money. But there are people that want that. They want that sleek,
the aesthetic, and all that stuff matters.
And that's fine. And right now, you can get it for pretty close to $700, and it's relatively easy to recommend it at that price.
Yeah. Where is it on sale?
So
right now?
Best Buy and Samsung both have it for $799. If you happen to have an iPhone XS Max Pro whatever laying around. I don't know. What is it?
I don't know where you're going.
Anyway, Samsung has their usual trade-in stuff. You can trade in tablets and stuff towards one. But Rakuten's still doing 10% for like three more days. So you can get 10% cash back plus education, military, all those discounts. If you go to Samsung.com, and we've got the link in our last article, if you go there, you can get it down to right around $700.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and at that price, that's becoming way more interesting to me. And, you know, for me, it just became like I didn't like taking the Samsung home when I had it. I would take it home on the weekends. Like, I don't want to sit on a charger over the weekend.
No.
I might write a couple articles over the weekend. I'm going to look up a few things. I might browse the repositories, play with some social media. I'm not pushing my Chromebook like crazy on the weekends. We got a lot of stuff going on usually. I don't want to think about charging a Chromebook over the weekend. I shouldn't have to. For a device that gets 8 to 10 hours of battery life, it's going to get me through the weekend. I'll plug it back in when I get to the office on Monday. The Samsung wasn't making it through half the day on Saturday for me. Like, I'd be getting the Saturday afternoon, like, oh, yeah. I got to charge, you know. Now I got to sit at this one spot on my couch so I can charge. Like, that, I don't like battery anxiety. Even though I work most of the time at the office, I don't like the idea that if something comes up and I'm out of the office, just like I was this week, I don't want to have to worry about finding a power outlet in the middle of a coronavirus pandemic when I'm sitting at a coffee shop. Like, exactly. I want to sit in my chair and not move with my mask on until I get up and leave. Like, and you know, to me, when you're talking about paying $1,000 for a Chromebook, that should not be in the equation. I shouldn't even have to be thinking about those things. And so I think
it's just like too big of a trade-off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so we threw the other one that went in there was the high-end Pixelbook Ghost.
Oh, that's right. The i5 and i7.
Those, I still think those are worth considering if you're just like, I don't care about all these other Chromebooks. I want the googliness. There's something about it. Yeah. There's just something to be said about picking up the Pixelbook Go or original Pixelbook. There's something about the way they build stuff and the way it feels and the way it works. I still love them. And so if you're just like, that's what I want, I just want more horsepower than that mid-range one, you know, yeah, go with the i5. I don't think the i7 with the 4K screen when we put it up against the Samsung was an embarrassment, honestly. Pointless. So I wouldn't bother with that. Plus, you're going to lose performance and battery life because of those 4K pixels that aren't really offering you much of anything. So even though you're bumping up to an i7, you're pushing yourself back with the extra screen and pixels. So the i5 is kind of where to go on that one.
Yeah.
If you're going to go with a more premium. Yeah. And then, you know, fingers crossed, we'll get another Pixelbook at some point in the future, but who knows?
Maybe.
As our second half, we'll talk about ARM and all that kind of stuff, and maybe.
We're
maybe
not Google. Getting a new AMD Pixelbook.
Maybe. No,
no. We're not.
Maybe Google, though, will get into their own chips.
That would be amazing.
Let's change that whole conversation.
So let's talk about the affordable category winner real quick, and I think this one's probably obvious for anybody who's followed our blog or our YouTube channel for any amount of time. The Lenovo Chromebook Duet was by far the winner of our affordable category. And it's just one of those devices for the price. We recommend it all the time. It's a great device to have at home. It's a great device. Honestly, if you need to just go out and get a little bit of work done, you can definitely do that on this thing. Comes with the keyboard, and it's just awesome. It's a great little device, and for the price, what's its retail? It was on sale.
Retail's $299 for the 128 model, which we always recommend because the 249 models sometimes hard to get, and it's half the storage. So fork over the extra $50 and get the 128. You're going to want it, especially if you're like my house where the kids use the tablets and they're installing 50 games a day. You want the storage. But you can get it for $250 at Best Buy right now. And it's probably going to stay that way through the end of Black Friday.
Which is strange. I honestly, the Lenovo's two big releases, the Flex 5 and the Duet. It's like IdeaPad, because it was the IdeaPad at 1.9. Those two devices, when they came out with their MSRP that was so aggressive early in the year, I just went ahead and conceded in my mind, I don't care what happens on Black Friday, they're not going to go on sale. They're going to put like $10 off or something like that, or 10% off or
throw
something.
Throw in a smart clock essential. Right, or like
bundle
that,
it or something like that. There's no way they have the ability to have a sale on these devices. And yet, here we are.
Yep.
I mean, heck, the Duet was on sale. The big one was on sale for, what, $230?
Yeah, it was like a week and a half ago. It's $250 right now. But yeah, it went to like $270, then it went to $250, then it went to $229. Now it's back up to $250. It'll probably be $250 until they either sell out or Black Friday's over.
So. Yeah, I mean, bonkers. I mean, for what you're talking about getting in that device, I mean, that's another thing where price just informs your opinion. When you talk about that little amount of money, it's a little slow. Yeah, so what?
It was $250. But go out and buy a good Android tablet for $250. Like a good one.
Don't bother going out because that's not a thing.
Right. You're going to buy the...
You're going to waste your time trying to find it.
We're not going to say who. We had someone that asked us they were going to buy the Duet, and then one of their business partners bought the Samsung S7 Plus.
Yeah.
But he didn't realize what he was buying was the keyboard because it's called the 7 Plus.
Well, Galaxy
The listing said Galaxy Tab S7 Plus keyboard. So he thought he was buying the tablet plus the keyboard. No, he bought the keyboard and it was...
$600?
No, the keyboard was like $200 something.
Yeah, so $200 something for a keyboard. He didn't get a tablet.
Yeah, so once he went back and looked, the whole package would have been $1,200.
Honest mistake, but still, unless you're going to buy the latest Galaxy Tab, whatever, you're not going to get a good Android tablet and spend less than $400 or $500.
Samsung's the only one that makes a solid Android tablet at this point, and the good ones start at $600 or $700. I mean, they're iPad style things. You know, that's the...
How much was that A one that you bought? The A,
they're like $400 or something like that. Yeah, probably can get them for $300. The A series tablets, they do not have great processors in them. So, I mean, they struggle as much or more than the Duet does. And then you don't get the option of having a full desktop browser and, you know, really good window capabilities while you're plugged in and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you're looking to get anything done on it, you know, the Duet makes way more sense as a tablet. And I think...
Oh, and you're getting a full desktop class.
Right. I just feel like, and I felt like this when they launched this tablet and then, you know, the pandemic set in. And so things have just been weird. But I'm hoping, you know, we've got eyes on one other MediaTek, low-end MediaTek tablet. And the other one Snapdragon tablet, Coach Z. So those are the two other ARM-powered Chrome OS tablets we're tracking right now. I'm hoping the industry moves in this direction. Like all these people that have made cheaper Android tablets, like, hey, cast your eyes over here. Like, this is a much better value proposition for end users. You know, that, oh, you can do a few tablet things or hand it off to your kids and do all that kind of stuff, but you're so much more flexible with these devices and what you can do with them, especially as Android just keeps getting better on Chromebooks. Like,
because there's so many, how many white label Android tablets are out there and they're garbage? I mean, they have a gig of RAM or maybe two gigs of RAM. What's that? Kobe, is that the brand? Like, lots of no knock on it, whatever. But imagine if, I mean, obviously they would have to meet Google standards, so there is some work to be done there. But imagine being able to go, your kid needs a tablet just for basic stuff, and you're able to go to Walmart and buy a Chrome OS tablet for $109.
Yeah.
It's not horrible.
I feel like there's a potential for the industry to move in that direction. Like, tablets aren't dead. Tablets they've shifted. You know, Apple won the Pure tablet. I think we just have to concede Apple won that war. I mean, but even their sales of iPads, you know, it's not like they're explosive anymore. So it's not like people buy a tablet and keep it for years now. And so, you know, thinking through what the affordable tablet race could look like, and I think that, you know, people could start finally going, oh, well, if I got a Chrome OS tablet, I can do all the same Android stuff I was doing on this cheap Android tablet. Oh, but if I plug it into a screen or I have a mouse and keyboard or it's got a keyboard dock or something, like, my kids can actually use it for school? Like, it's not just a touch interface. And so, it's just going to take a little bit of time for people to see that and other manufacturers to go, okay, how can we do this and what would it take? But Lenovo clearly has proven.
I was going to say, they set the
stage. Yeah. It's possible to do this at an affordable rate. You know, are we going to see $100 Chrome OS tablets? Probably not, because the people that want to make those aren't going to want to rise up to Google's quality standards. But I think the $200 to $300 Chromebook tablet race, I think we'll look back and see it began with the Duet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, because there have been some tablets before, but they were overpriced. Like, the Acer Tab 10 was $380 or something like that and never went on sale. And it was terrible. It was super slow. It had a great screen on it and a stowable stylus, but it was all plastic. It was clearly built kind of cheap, didn't have any peripherals to it, no dockable keyboard. It was overpriced and really slow. And so, like, to me, that didn't count. And Asus made the exact same thing. It's Scarlett.
You know, yeah, they made three of them out there, and they're identical. So
they were all just not great. And they were built kind of for education, but they weren't built with a keyboard in mind. So, like, for students, it's like, well, what are they supposed to do with this thing? Like, you want them to never have a keyboard? Or are you going to go, no third party is going to make a keyboard for a device that sells 1,000 units? Like, yeah, it's just not going to happen. Yeah. So it was just kind of a messy space for a while. And it's like Lenovo decided, and they clearly worked with Google on this, they decided, like, we're going to do this and attack this in a very aggressive manner, meaning we're going to have the accessory in the box, and we're going to make sure that the thing feels good and looks good and doesn't feel like a piece of garbage. And I don't know how they pulled it off. I don't they know, but they did. And I'm hoping
magic.
I'm hoping that one of the, you know, we've talked about MediaTek's upcoming processors. They're the 8192 and then the 8195 that are coming in 2021. That I'm hoping one of those ends up being a Lenovo. I hope we get a Duet too.
Oh yeah.
Just keep the same formula. Just seriously, upgrade the processor and give me a freaking USB Type-C that has a proper output for monitors.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, everything we've seen with Asurata and most of other MediaTek 8183 devices, which are what's in the Duet, all have the MUX in there to do proper output.
For some reason, on the Duet, didn't do it.
Not going to do it.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole. Let's take a quick break for an ad, and we'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. We recommend the service, and we use NordVPN because they keep your browsing secure and private on any device. Whether you're using a Chromebook, an Android device, a Mac, an iPhone, or a Windows device, NordVPN is going to protect your browsing. They also have 24/7 customer support in case you ever have any issues, and they offer a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to learn more and maybe give it a try, head over to chromeunboxed.com/Nord. N-O-R-D.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. If you listened to our podcast last week, you would have heard us talking about the M1 chip that Apple announced and showed some pretty outlandish graphs on stage.
Yeah, and there was already like back and forth.
Graphs
yeah.
are tight. Yeah.
tight. But there was back graphs and forth. Tight. Like online, even as we podcasted last week, where people were like, I bet it's going to do this. And people like, God, that's going to be trash. And, you know, people going back and forth. And it's like, hey, don't, you know, on both sides of it, like, I think MKBHD had probably the most grounded approach. He's like, you are arguing basically about the same thing. You're just coming at it from different perspectives.
Yeah, exactly.
One of you is saying, you're both assuming things, basically, mm-hmm. before the thing's out. Some of you are assuming bad things, and some of you are assuming good things. You know, but you're both trying to get to the same argument, and I think that was fair. But it turns out the people who thought it was going to be a monster were right, and Apple apparently has gone and delivered on its claims. Because Tuesday morning, all of a sudden, all the
9:30,
yeah, all the M1 reviews all dropped. Like, all of a sudden I was like, oh my god, because I remember Joe got to the office and I was like, dude, have you watched it yet? And
I was like, no,
he hadn't yet. So we just sat and consumed new MacBook videos for, I don't know, 30-40 minutes, mm-hmm. Just to kind of see, like, okay, let's see if everybody's on the same page. And across the board, they pretty much are. It's Apple has pulled off something here that, you know, they deserve credit for it. And I say this all the time. Like, I give Apple credit where credit's due. Credit is due here. Like, they've done something that clearly this wasn't a fly-by-night situation.
Now, they've been planning and working on this thing for a while now.
Like, my guess is probably around the A12. Like, when they introduced the Bionic chips, the minute they started really getting separate cores to do things, they're like,
in a laptop.
Yeah,
they were like, look what we've done. I think it was that, and because they, I think the Bionics came along with the first iPad Pro as well. And I think it was just the culmination of all those things. I guarantee you that it wasn't like, oh, wow, maybe we should think about it. I think those were testing devices.
It was part of the roadmap for sure.
Yeah, I bet they've been on this, from what most people think, about 2015, 2016, whenever Skylake hit. Like, Skylake was like the straw that broke the camel's back for Apple and Intel. Like, the Skylake chips were just a mess on, they were a mess on Chromebooks too. But they were a mess on Apple's stuff. And I think that was where they decided, you know, we've been thinking about our own silicon, and it's not the first time that Apple's changed. Like, everybody just assumes Apple always had Intel chips, and they didn't. They used to have those Core 2 Duo, whatever, power PCs, that stuff, whatever that was. That was what they were on for a long time. And so when they made the switch to x86, it was similar to what they're doing now. It was a paradigm shift. It was a shift for them in the way that the instruction sets get handled, and their developers had to, you know, they had to create bridge software, and then the developers came along. So this isn't the first time Apple's done this, and so it's not unprecedented. It is just a big, big move. And the crazy part is
Someone has
the loudest GPS.
So somebody's out there jamming. What happened?
Yeah.
And then Google Maps just cut in. And
yeah, because if you ever heard motorcycle speakers, they're comparable to like live studio PA systems.
Right.
And the guy obviously had his phone connected to it.
That was funny.
It was really loud.
I was like, crazy. I thought it was coming from our office. I was like, why is Max so loud in there?
But yeah, like what they're delivering here is shocking, because it's a big shift that they not only said, you know, finally announced and said, we're going to do this. They're delivering these first gen versions of these things that are just blowing everybody's minds, to be honest with you. And so you've got multiple things going on here. So you've got their chip, which is insanely more powerful, I think, than anybody thought that they could pull off with an ARM-based chip at this point. So,
and what ARM Cortex is it?
Does anyone know yet?
Did
we ever figure out what it was? I don't think they published that anywhere.
Because I remember we were looking when it first was announced, but I wonder if now that people have had them in their hand, can you find that on the
details? They don't put it in their details. I guarantee it. Let's see. Apple M1. Cortex. Let's just see if anything pops up.
Yeah, I doubt that. They're probably keeping it hush. But
the fact that it's out, it can't be 78, because that ARM just debuted Cortex A78 this month or something. So they just said, hey, this is a thing you can use. So it seems like it would be impossible for them to have that out that fast.
Whatever they've done, they've taken the pieces that they need of whatever Cortex and made it work.
So this is Wikipedia, so take it for what it's worth. But they're comparing it. It's ARM architecture, obviously, but they're comparing it to what Intel's doing with Lakefield, which is the four big cores, one small core, or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
They're saying it is Ice Storm cores and Firestorm cores, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I was just curious.
But now I must find out.
Yeah,
keep digging.
Yeah, we're not sure. We just know it's ARM based, and so that means a different instruction set for software. So, they built an insanely fast processor to start with, and everybody kind of thought that wouldn't be the case, because like ARM has always lagged behind x86 in performance, and we've known that gap was closing. I just don't think anybody realized how small or completely eradicated that gap is now. And so you've got that on one hand, but then you've got the other part of it where they also promised Rosetta 2 would be this emulation. They don't call it emulation, though. I think Dieter and Neelay were talking about it. It's not technically emulation. It's actually a conversion software. But it's the closest thing you can imagine is emulation, what most people have seen. And so you have that software also that's allowing for Intel-based apps for them to rewrite those instruction sets and then run on this new architecture. So everybody assumed that too, because we've seen this attempted by Microsoft with Windows. So
and
Windows
it was
on
garbage.
ARM, yeah. So Windows on ARM runs a handful of applications on these new Snapdragon 8cx processors. So like the Surface Pro X, the newest Surface Pro X, well, the old one too. They run ARM-based stuff fine, but then when it comes down to needing to have Photoshop or something that's not been built for ARM, not been rewritten and compiled for that.
Whenever he was zooming in on the image and it was like layered rendering.
Terrible. Yeah,
oh,
you can tell
it's
not
so
hitting
bad.
GPU. Like, it's just not working. The instruction set is not being rewritten in a good way to where it's efficient. Emulation takes away from horsepower. It just always has. So we kind of expected that same thing to happen with Rosetta 2. doesn't seem to be really the case. Most reviewers are saying, yeah, my x86 apps are working pretty well.
The Verge said all their Photoshop or all their Adobe suite was working fine, right?
They said there was a little bit of slowdown, but it's workable. It's completely usable. It's fine. And the thing is, like, big development houses are going to make M1 compatible stuff.
I think Adobe has already said they're working on it.
Their stuff will
come out
in 2021. So there's going to be a gap there, and it's going to be some time. But Chrome was released yesterday or day before for recompiled for the M1 chip. So, like, the bigger apps are going to come along really fast on this. I mean, yes, MacBooks aren't the dominant force in the industry. They're not. They own, 15 or 20% or something like that.
Nothing much.
Of the market share. But there's just something about your stuff being able to work on a Mac. I mean, they own enough of the market share, because that's the thing. When we start talking about all PCs and everything, a lot of those PCs are in workforces. They are in stores, all that kind of stuff. And so Windows PCs are just kind of everywhere, embedded in all sorts of things. Macs are generally devices consumer people go and buy. And so if we were able, I don't know if there's a graph for that, but if we were able to cut out all the extras and just say, okay, consumers, how many people have a Mac? I bet you it's closer to like a third.
Yeah, probably.
To maybe 40%, mm-hmm. Because you just walk around, go to coffee shops, go to anywhere where you're out and you see someone with a laptop. There's lots of places.
Go to colleges.
There are lots of MacBooks.
Yeah.
And the one thing I wish that Apple would have figured out how to do with this, since this is now their own silicon, this is their own in-house stuff, that should have brought the prices down a little bit. Like, imagine had the MacBook Air come in for $799 or something like that, or the Mac Pro, MacBook Pro, $999. Yeah. Like, that would have been a really sweet spot, I think, and for them to be able to say, hey, not only are you getting the same type of performance you got before or better, we're also going to bring that price down a little bit to make it a little bit more feasible for people to buy. But whatever, it's Apple. They just charge more for stuff because they can.
They're a luxury brand.
Yeah. And they would own more of the market if they would get away from that.
Yeah,
but whatever.
But it's their thing.
But the important part is Apple promised some stuff here, and they just went and delivered it. They really did with the M1. And I'm a little shocked by it, but I'm also super encouraged by it because, people a lot of times ask why are you on about ARM all the time? Like, why does it matter? We've had comments like if I have a 11th gen Tiger Lake Chromebook option in 2021, why do I care about ARM? Like, why do you care? Well, the benefits are pretty straightforward, I think. Insane battery life. I mean, the MacBook Pro is saying, 20 hours of playback?
Use.
I'm like, and the reviewers are already starting to bear this out. They're like, it's the battery life is double what we were getting on the previous generation of MacBooks.
I forget the test Marquez said he ran, but he was looping a video. I can't remember.
He had a 4K YouTube video in the background while doing something else literally all day. Yeah. He got 8 or 8.5 hours while doing ridiculous amounts of stuff that you don't do. Like, you just don't do that stuff. We're probably talking multiple days. Wasn't he the one that said that using it like he normally uses a laptop, he hadn't charged it since he got it.
Yep.
That's iPad level battery. Yep. So there you go. If that should just be enough for you. If you can get a processor that's as powerful as everything you're used to,
or even
and double your battery life.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're doubling your battery.
Well, and the thing is, like, this processor in some aspects is actually far better than its Intel equivalents, depending on the thing you're doing. So some of the rendering processes, single core scores, like benchmarks across the board, it wins against Core i9 chips, 10th gen i9 processor. So it's not it's pretty close to like an i3 or maybe an i5. Like, no, it's smoking everything. The GPU, I think, is where you get into the point where it's a strong GPU. It's not going to beat like a Core i9 with a discrete, I don't know GPU numbers, but some AMD or some
3070 or even like a 20. It's going to be probably comparable to like the, a couple of years ago when the 1080s were the biggest ones. But I mean, these are cards that are more than strong enough to run the best video editors out there. I mean, it's not going to be like crazy AAA gaming, but no. At the same time, I think graphics cards, like the big ones, I think they're so overhyped anyway. Yeah. These guys are spending, what's that new 3830? That thing's it's a couple thousand dollars, but for what? I mean,
that's crazy.
But I'm not into that, so I don't know.
What was the game Dave2D was playing?
They all run, for whatever reason, Tomb Raider, Shadow something. Is working on it, and you know he was getting like 28 frames or something like that on high settings.
Can I play that on Stadia?
Yeah,
Tomb
Raider. Because the scene they show, without a GPU, Joe and I both were like,
"Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that. It's about as far as I made it."
Yeah. Oh, is it where she's climbing,
she falls off the snow?
Yeah.
They kept showing that scene, and the point they were making in that was that you know this was a game running through Rosetta 2, so it's being translated, and you know like I don't know that there are any games, like bigger games that you can get that have already been compiled for the M1. I don't think so. Probably not yet. And it may be a while before we see that. But the point being, like, when it comes down to standard stuff you'd expect to do on a high-end computer, it's doing it. And it's doing it at thermal rates that are insane, with battery life that's insane. You know, I mean, and so you quickly start to see, I think, the benefit of ARM here. You know, the TDP is really low, so it just doesn't need that much power. And because of that, like, it's going to be interesting.
10 watt?
I think 10. Crazy. So, I mean, these are things that can be charged and run off of battery packs, you know, that you would carry and put in your cell phone. It's that type of processing. And so, like, having that, having these thin and light devices that are fanless, like the MacBook Air is completely fanless. And so, over periods of time, if you're loading it up with stuff, the MacBook Pro
is going to throttle a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to throttle down just so it doesn't overheat. But, I mean, for general work cases, it's going to perform the exact same as the MacBook Pro. And you can fit it in a small footprint, and you can customize these chips to do the things you want your hardware to do. And so all of those things kind of combine together now that we have performance that is rivaling Intel and x86 architecture chips. Yeah, ARM to me is kind of the future of computing. Like, the benefits aren't just, oh, here's more raw horsepower. It's, oh, here's more raw horsepower without fans and without, you know, with thinner form factors that you don't have to think about all these moving pieces inside your device anymore. It's more like a tablet with benefits.
It's integrated.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, just
one thing.
It's integrated. And there's always advantages, you know, efficiency advantages of that. I mean, in anything, you know.
And it begs the question, like, we know that there are rumors that Google's working on their own chips, you know, for the report that came out in March, both for Pixel phones and for a new Pixel Book. And it just, I don't know, that gets me excited to think
what they could do,
what it's going to be like, you know.
Because they, like we talked about last week, they've done some chip making. Like, they've made the neural core things, and they've done some of this stuff.
Their Titan chip, like, is in-house.
They've had a little bit of experience with this, but I'm confident that they could come out with, you know, a new chip for their phones. And how cool would it be if they just went ahead and put out an updated Pixel Book?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, the minute you can build silicon that's going to power a phone, again, Google wants to stay in the affordable phone range. The way to do that is to be able to integrate your hardware all the way up and down. That's what Apple's done. And that's why I said it's a little bit of a shame to me that this hasn't meant cheaper
price,
phones and cheaper tablets and cheaper everything from Apple, because it's part of the equation. For Apple, it just means having higher thresholds.
They need to build
make
new,
more money.
They need to build a new spaceship office.
Yes. Have you seen their office? That's why the prices haven't come down. And not to say that Google doesn't make obscene amounts of money,
of
too.
Course,
so, but I think for them, like, they don't have the clout that Apple does. So they have to, in order to stay competitive, they need to stay in that Pixel 4a 5G range where it's like, hey, we're going to deliver something better than you expect at less money. And having your own in-house silicon helps you do that because you can build the experiences you want and tweak the cores inside of the chip and integrate things so that there's less thermal need, and then integrate things so that there's less instruction sets being wasted. It's just more efficient across the board. And then, you know, translate that over to Chrome OS.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be awesome.
The interesting thing that we talked about, so we were already very interested in this chip and everything that they were doing, but about the same time, actually, this conversation started about a month ago, I started looking into getting a new editing station, basically. As we've talked more internally about some changes that we're going to do for the YouTube channel and wanting to maybe put out some more content and doing some things with the podcast where there's video involved. And we had a bottleneck with this device that we have, which we figured out this one is a Skylake.
This is part of the straw breaking the cable's back.
And it's fine. it's fine, buddy, for most stuff. But whenever I really load it down, I can't normally have Chrome open if I'm getting into a heavy workload in Final Cut. Like whenever I start adding graphics and color grading and even rendering and then exporting, like I have to close Chrome. If not, it will take forever. But as part of that, we started talking about, hey, let's get a new editing station. Well, we were looking at the 2014 trash cans.
Yeah. Yep. And the old Mac Pro.
Yeah, the old Mac Pro, the little trash can one, which you can still beef up and get a pretty nice device,
yeah,
but it's dated. We were going to spend it was like $3,200, yeah, I think, is what it ended up being. So, you know, that's not too bad for a nice editing station. Well, then we hear, you know, Mac Mini with M1, and for the price, like, yes, the price didn't really come down, but the value of us being able to go, and we ordered one. So we were so impressed.
Yesterday we placed our order.
Yeah, we were so impressed with the reviews and everything. If anything, we just want to try it just to see what ARM is capable of and to be able to make some videos about that and talk about video editing on an ARM processor. So we ordered it, and as we were looking around at some different benchmarks, it's like, yeah, it was maybe a little bit slower for its rendering time for the video that Marquez did, the 8K RAW, you know, whatever video he did.
But he was comparing it to what we would assume is, what, a $20,000 machine?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, so the value is still there. Like, oh,
absolutely.
The value to performance is what I'm getting at. So yeah, like, the price didn't really come down. I guess, the Mac Minis were $699 to begin with. And so they're about the same. I think you still get their original, like, base model Mac Mini for $699. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And
they're close.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
And you can't upgrade these anymore, obviously, because all this stuff's on the single die. Yeah. You know, so.
So, you know, we, after seeing some of those rendered times that Marquez put out and a couple others, I was just sold on it. I'm like, if anything, we could go spend $3,000 or more to get something like the iMac that Marquez is using, that's probably i9, right, completely beefed out, you know, 64 gigs of RAM or something, and it's only going to be maybe 10%, not even, probably 10%, maybe less than that.
Yeah, it's marginal when you look at the jump from what we have now to the Mac Mini, or the Mac Mini to that.
Yeah.
It's, value factor is so way better.
What was our total order? $1,300?
Yeah, 13 and change.
So, I mean,
because we went ahead and got a terabyte of storage,
right,
and went up to 16 gigs of RAM.
Since it's all soldered and everything. Yeah,
because we can't really do anything with it after that. So we wanted to have some room, because I foresee this thing being around for a little while.
I hope so. I really hope so. I mean, obviously, we're going to get it in and we're going to put the exact same project on each machine, run them, you know, from the original MacBook Pro and then that, and see what we can get out of it. And I am almost certain that this thing is going to be our new editing machine, and I think that is incredible to say that we're spent $1,300 and are getting an editing machine that's comparable to
probably a $10,000 to $15,000iMac. It's insane.
And then let's not even talk about the cheese grater.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's because that was the other one he compared it to.
Yeah,
and one was the fastest, like, of course.
Well, and I watched a video yesterday. Dom Esposito did.
Oh, yeah.
He had the 2020 16-inch fully spec'd MacBook Pro, I think. I think he said it was $4,000 or $5,000 MacBook Pro 16-inch. And, I mean, the Mac Pro, the new M1, we were talking rendering times anyway on Final Cut for a pretty good sized file. I think one render was 9 or 10 minutes, and then the M1 was like 9.5 or 9 minutes 40 seconds, and then the beefed out Core i9 whatever was 8 minutes and 40 seconds. It was like a minute,
exactly,
difference.
For the price, it's insane.
Yeah, but for comparison, like right now, if you do, we're doing everything 4K now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you do a 5-minute 4K video, how long does it take to?
Well, the one that we did the other day that was about 4 minutes. What did we say? It was 45 minutes.
The MediaTek.
Yeah. That video. Was yeah. it like 45 yeah. minutes?
40 so it's minutes? 10. So it's 10 to 1. Pretty much. Yeah, and we'll be going from that to 1 to 1.
And so. I mean, we bought this thing used for $1,900. We spent $1,900 to get this thing.
Yep. After we lost the first one.
Gosh, that was crazy. I don't even want to talk about that.
That'll be for one of our other live ones that we do.
Yeah, for real.
But still, from going from that to practically 1 to 1
comparison,
will be a huge, huge productivity boost for Mr. Joseph here.
Yeah. So very, very excited about that. But yeah, I mean, all that to say, you know, it's running on an ARM chip, and for the price, I think Apple has done something really special here. So,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of shocking. Apple tends to deliver most of the things that they, some of their language is obviously a little grandiose, but it usually is for smaller stuff. Or like, this is magical, or this experience, whatever. They'll make grandiose claims, I think, about the experience of using something a lot of times. But generally, when they talk about performance of something and they have some metrics, even though those metrics were not the sharpest things, you know, it wasn't like, oh, here's a specific metric, you know, like, you know, the 3x more this and 5x, you know, they usually don't say that stuff unless they feel pretty confident about the thing.
Yeah.
But it was still hard to imagine, because what you're basically talking about is a souped up version of an iPad Air or an iPad Pro. Well, I guess iPad Air has the newer one. So take that and like just juice it up a little bit. It's kind of what it felt like. I'm like, really? I mean, you're
throwing out some pretty big claims
here. Right. We're talking about putting that thing that runs one app at a time, that are all based on, you know, ARM architecture and iPad OS apps that clearly aren't trying to be desktop apps. You're going to take that chip and put it in a desktop and expect it to, like, even if it just does okay, that would be pretty awesome. And it just showed up and it's like, holy crap. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe what this thing is capable of. And it just gets me excited less about like, oh, I'm going to go buy me a Mac now. Whatever. You know, it gets me excited about the idea.
Well, you kind of did.
Yeah. Well, I bought a third of one. But, you know, it gets me excited about the idea of what could be possible with Chromebooks, because not just the operating system itself, but the operating system, the type of expectations people walk up to a Chromebook with, and then just the web in general, all of it is so well suited for this type of processing. Like, so well suited for it, because Chromebooks, people expect, you're not expecting to come in here and edit 4K video, you know, and create movies and stuff. That's not what you buy a Chromebook for. You know, could we see some video editors in the future? Sure. You know, and to be able to do some simple edit, you know, stuff and some YouTube stuff, I want to see that. But I don't know if there ever comes a time where you buy a Chromebook to become a video professional. I don't know that that's even in the cards. So if we push that kind of stuff aside and realize, like, people approach Chromebooks to do the stuff, like, we were just watching a video. What were we watching? Oh, I was watching Linus Tech Tips. I thought he was going to kind of I thought he was going to basically come on there and eat crow, honestly, with because he basically said the M1 chips were not going to be any good at all. And it was kind of harsh on a video that kind of had created some back and forth. And so I saw this video where it says, it was just titled, "I don't know how to use the new MacBook with the Core M1 or with the M1 chip." And I was like, well, I'm curious what this is. But it's his other channel, Circuit something, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he was just unboxing it and talking about it. Like, he literally doesn't know his way around Mac OS, obviously. But
he's good at titles.
Yeah. But in the middle of it, he was sitting there doing something. And he was like, you know, is this going to replace, you know, discrete GPUs and da-da-da and all this stuff? He's like, I still don't think that's the case. He's like, but for most people, they crack open a MacBook and they spend most of their time on the web. He's like, most people use a MacBook just like a Chromebook.
Yep.
And he said that, and I'm like, you're absolutely right, they do. And so as people's tendencies and expectations obviously are shifting in computing in general across the board, Chromebooks are in this very nice space to be like, hey, we're good at that stuff. We're good at what the general person wants to do. And ARM chip, like, Chrome OS runs fine on ARM chips. And, oh, by the way, since web technologies are kind of open and, like, it doesn't matter. It's not like, oh, well, I got this ARM thing, I can't go to that website anymore. Not a thing. So don't worry about that. And, oh, actually, ARM chips are going to be better on Chromebooks because we want to run Android apps too from time to time. Well, those all just do way better on ARM chips. Oh, we like thin and light devices. Great. ARM chips are great for that too. Oh, we want battery the prices life to be down. Oh, ARM chips are great for that too. You know, and I think with MediaTek coming in, we talked about this last week, but MediaTek showing up and saying, like, we're dedicated to this thing. Qualcomm's, you know, dipping a toe in the water with the 7C. Like, I think, you know, they've got some experience. Like, Qualcomm has a lot of experience of showing up and saying, here's our chip. We're going to work with these manufacturers to make it as good as we can for this device. You know, I think we're going to see what I would say is a 75% engagement of ARM manufacturers and Chromebook manufacturers compared to what we're seeing with Apple's completely integrated M1 thing. I think, yeah. I think it's a 65-75% as good as that. Like, it's not going, they're not just slapping chips. And like, it felt like with the Rock chip devices, for instance, that they just slapped the Rock chip in and let's just get it working and move on. Like, we're not going to optimize anything for anything. It's just, we're trying to get this. And they said they optimized stuff, and I'm sure they had to do some optimization. I'm speaking in generalities here, but it did not feel like this was this tightly integrated system.
So you feel like OP1 meant nothing? Is that what you're saying?
Basically. Yeah. I think they wanted it to do something. I think really they wanted to, yeah, do something, I think, but I think they just, I think it got given up on.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of it was. I think that was Google trying to do something kind of like what USI did. They're just creating an initiative, right, to say these are chips that we check the check off, you know, that they're good to go for Chrome OS, and it never caught on, because I think the OP1 site is no more.
Yeah, it's,
I think,
just, it's gone.
A spam site now, yeah, or something. So,
you know, so that whole thing, I think they wanted to do that, but who
knows? They don't need to now, though, and that's the good thing.
Right, in the middle of it, they might have figured out, like, this isn't necessary, and this is not what we attempt to do with smartphones, and it's been fine. Oh, and maybe we need to start talking about building our own silicon, you know, because this, yeah, is around the Pixelbook 2 time. Our Pixel 2 phone time. And so I think they started seeing the writing on the wall early on. Like, we can't compete in the upper tier phone space unless we figure out a way to deliver good performance and do the things we want to do and get the price down. And so I feel like the Pixel 3 was confusing. The Pixel 4 felt like a throwaway. The Pixel 5 feels like a kind of a step in a weird direction. Like, I think it's all leading up to possibly a Pixel 6 with Google's own, yeah, silicon inside. And there are reasons why these companies want to do this. It's more control. It's more integration. It's more efficient. It's all these great things. And I think all of that stuff will end up bleeding down to Chromebooks eventually. It's just going to take time.
It's just a matter of time, yeah.
But because of the flexibility of ARM.
So well suited.
The flexibility of Chrome OS as well. I think, like I said, I think we're getting to a 75% solution. I think these new MediaTek chips, when they come out, I think not only is the chip optimized, I think Chrome OS is also going to be optimized. Because these MediaTek chips, they didn't say we're putting these in laptops. They're building these for Chromebooks. So when they're thinking about what cores and what pieces they're going to put in, they want to put in the best possible things to make Chromebooks better. I can't say the same thing of the Snapdragon 7C. Unless it's a special version, we've heard nothing of this. A special version that's just for Chromebooks, sure, but I don't think it is. It's their compute platform. So we're back to a little bit of the Intel game where it's like, well, we wanted to do this, but this chip only does this, so we'll do it that way.
We're going to take this piece to make it do this.
Right,
yeah.
And so I think the 7Cs are going to be good. I think the MediaTek chips are going to be better because they're going to be more optimized. You're building a chip with this, these Chromebooks in mind. You're not taking a phone chip or a laptop or a tablet chip. You're taking a Chromebook chip and putting it in a Chromebook, and it's more optimized and more streamlined. And then I think our 100% is Google, yeah, making its own silicon.
It's the same reason that this Mac Mini is I think going to be our editing station, because it's that vertical integration, right? You have software, hardware, and everything kind of built for this one purpose, and that's when you can get this just awesome experience. And I think when Google decides to do it, they're going to be able to deliver a similar thing. They're going to probably wow us even more than we're wowed with all of this Mac stuff, because Mac stuff, we're always kind of like, nah, it's fine, it's great, right. Just because it's just who we are, you know. But we're giving them credit because they did an amazing job. But if Google pulls this off, like, Google can do some really cool stuff. And perhaps, I don't think they would do this, Google could make a chip that then other people get to use.
Yeah, that would be that would be an interesting move.
Yeah,
but it's not unprecedented. Think about it. Qualcomm makes a chip. A lot of people use it. Yeah. You know, MediaTek.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like chips. Qualcomm's out there making phones,
right? I mean, there's a chance. There's a chance
that could still be really cool
that Google would do that.
Well, Samsung makes for other, or yeah, they make for. Do they make for? Samsung made chips for Apple at one point.
Yeah, and they'll manufacture chips.
That's what I mean. Manufacture. Yeah,
Samsung manufactures all sorts of them. I think Samsung got the contract to manufacture the Snapdragon Qualcomm 875. I'm pretty sure they're going to manufacture, like physically make all of them.
It's crazy.
Which I don't understand how that works. So if you're making the thing, how is it you can't make a chip that's the same? I guess it's probably all
licensing,
right?
Or something,
bizarro town,
or contracts, like,
yeah. So it's not as if, you know, like Samsung makes their own chips obviously and they put it in their own stuff. Apple now makes all of their own chips and puts in all of their own stuff, but it doesn't mean that a chip maker can't share that technology if they also own the ecosystem. Exactly. So
yeah,
I don't think anybody's been in that. No one's been in the position Google's in to make a chip. So this would be the equivalent of Microsoft making its own silicon.
That's yeah.
So if Microsoft came up and said, "Hey, we have our new Microsoft XRZ7 chip," like, and it's our own chip. It's optimized for Windows 10,
exactly.
And it'll run Windows 10 like a mother. And here you go. And we put it in our Surfaces
like a mother.
we put it in all our Surfaces, and we're going all in on ARM, Again, we got to ignore the whole piece of the pie that is legacy applications for Windows. Like, that's what will always drag them down. If we ignore all that piece and they said, here, this is what we're doing, and here all our Surfaces are running on this, and we found some emulation, and they basically mimicked Apple and what they're going to do, it wouldn't be out of bounds, I don't think, for them to also offer these chips to their hardware partners.
Right.
Nobody who's made chips at this point has hardware partners also. Samsung makes Samsung stuff. Samsung does not make something that they put on other people's stuff. Yeah. So that we don't have that. Nobody's written this story yet. So Google has a chance. Like, we're like, oh, they only would put it in Google stuff. I'm like, I don't know that's the case at all. Like, if it's going to benefit the Android ecosystem, if it's going to benefit the Chrome OS ecosystem, why not? Why wouldn't you go ahead? Because
at the end of the day, they just want more people using their products and seeing their ads. And
right.
I mean, they're a search company at the end of the day.
And they don't want to hurt their partners. Like, exactly. That's where, like, Google, Apple, and Microsoft overlap in these different areas. But Google and Microsoft are most alike in this area where they make their own stuff, both on the software and hardware side, but they also have hardware partners.
Right.
Exactly. You've got to be careful with all that kind of stuff. Apple doesn't have to worry about that. They just go do their thing, and they make their own stuff, and it's Apple.
And Google could move even closer to what Microsoft does, because Microsoft has their hardware set. It's not little, but they have their devices, and they're distinctly Microsoft, you know, the Surface line and all that stuff. And Google could do that as well, and then license their stuff the way that Microsoft does. And you have Google Pixel stuff, and then you have Google stuff that they license to other people. And, you know, Google can still keep their proprietary stuff for, like, Pixel cameras and things like that.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But still give their partners the benefit of using the same silicon that they're producing and make a little change on the side, you know.
Yeah, it would make sense. Yeah, I hope so, because ultimately I just don't think Google's hardware reach is wide enough for the waters that they wade into. So, like, Google's, even if they make their own silicon, Google, the Pixel phones are never going to be, it might take a decade even if Pixel phones killed it every year in and out and they were just the perfect phone, it would take a decade for them to overtake Samsung's dominance.
Absolutely.
Of delivering knockout phones. And they've delivered medium phones. So they're not even started on the path to that takedown. So that means your ecosystem for Android phones is still massive. It's still wide, and only creating something that's unique and awesome for your own stuff in that ecosystem is not going to be helpful to the ecosystem. Yeah. You just keep doing what you're doing over here in the corner, and, you know, there's your little story. And the same is true with Chrome OS. Like, I love Pixelbooks. We all love Pixelbooks, and people that use them love Pixelbooks. But it's a small fraction of all Chromebooks. And so if you want to make a dent, if you want to make a change in an ecosystem, keeping it to yourself is not going to be the way forward, I don't think. And I don't know. So that makes me hopeful that Google would say, it doesn't matter what Qualcomm's done, it doesn't matter what Apple's doing, it doesn't matter what Samsung does. Like, we're going to create this architecture, we're going to create this hardware, and then we're going to allow other people to license or use or sell it, or I don't know. I don't know how they go about doing it, but no one has been in exactly their scenario to build a chip and make a choice on how to do that. And so they kind of get to write that story and be interesting to see how it goes, because I feel quite confident, really, especially after the M1, that it's coming.
Yeah.
Just a matter of how.
Who knows? How they roll it out, you know, when they decide to roll it out. But you know they've got their foot on the gas right now with Apple making this announcement and going
Apple's
out
making
there.
Waves. They're big,
making
big waves.
They're making some big waves, and you know there's people at Google that want to keep up with that. So yeah. I don't know. I like your logic. It all makes sense. it's super simple. I mean, come on, just do it. I think that's it for today, guys. Thanks for tuning in and listening. This whole little last section of the podcast here, we didn't even plan on this. It's just that's the beauty of podcasting.
Yeah.
Kind of just went down a path and here we are. So make sure to enter to win the giveaway for the 713. That is up and running right now. We've got it running for like a month, so need to go get entered to win on that. We've got another giveaway coming soon, so stay tuned to the website and to the YouTube channel. Also, stay tuned to the website for deals. Gabe is just cranking out deals left and right, and it's hard to mention deals on the podcast because depending on when you listen to this, that deal might be gone or whatever. So there's a couple out right now that we really like. I mean, the Duet's a great deal.
Yep, the Spin 713.
713 is still on sale. $80 off on that? Mm-hmm. $50 off.
$80 off.
And even when it's not, it's still awesome.
Exactly. But go check. Just go to the website and click the
deals.
Yeah,
keep an eye out because we've got, with 2020 being 2020, we've got a preview of a lot of what's coming because everyone's trying to get their online sales ramped up. So we know that there's going to be some even better deals coming later this month.
Right.
If you've been eyeing the HP, don't buy it yet. It's going to be like $379. It's $250.
And they've already advertised that?
Yeah, that's going to be Best Buy didn't put a specific day, but I think that's going to be their Black Friday deal on the HP X360. So $250 off of
that's a good 10th
gen flagship device.
That's a good
one.
Pretty
dope.
So yeah, I mean, stay tuned. We've talked about doing this deal newsletter. Maybe this week has just been crazy because Gabe was out for a little bit. We were dealing with some of that, and then we decided to film our best Chromebooks of 2020. And film another big video that's kind of similar to that one that's going to go out here soon. And and so it's just been a crazy week. But maybe early next week we can get this deals newsletter out. We've talked about doing a specific newsletter subscription where if you just want to know about deals, you can subscribe to this thing. The only thing we got to figure out, though, did we talk about this already? Like, it's a per post notification. It almost has to be.
Yeah.
So when a deal goes out, we need to email them then and tell them about the deal.
Yes. So we would set that up to be, it would be every time a deal post goes up, you get an email, because if you waited for a daily digest, for instance, some of these deals don't make it through lunch.
No.
You
know? Exactly. Absolutely. So yeah, we got to figure that out. But stay tuned for that. If you're interested in that sort of stuff, we will obviously talk about it on the website and if we get it done before next week, we'll talk about it on the podcast. But okay, thanks so much for tuning in, guys. We'll catch you all next week. See ya. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcast. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's happening in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, make sure to check out our website, chromeunbox.com, and follow us on social media by searching for @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.